We already know how to avoid 70% of all deaths among children worldwide. What we don't always know is how to put this knowledge into practice. But developing the capacity to implement health advances we already know about, and also finding new ways of preventing and treating illness, is what two scientists at the Kilimanjaro Medical Center, KCMC, have been doing for some time. When I visited Jim Todd and Hugh Rayburn in Moshi, Tanzania, in the foothills of Mount Kilimanjaro, I asked Jim first what capacity development meant to him.
Capacity development has got as its root some of the things that we've learned from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine over the last 50 years of doing research and work in London. I think it involves research which enables us to deliver efficacious interventions. It also involves teaching people how to do research. It also involves networking so that we build together collaborative partnerships between different people. And finally, and most importantly, it means delivering that research to policymakers.
Now, those, in fact, are hugely important things to be doing. But I think the big question is, how do you do it successfully? How, first of all, do you deliver efficacious treatments effectively?
Some of the interventions that we know work in many settings, and it's a matter of working out how we can deliver those to the people in need of those interventions.
Of course, I said treatments, yeah, I should have said interventions, because much of your work is concerned with preventing ill health.
That's true. So there's both treatment and prevention, which is known works in many settings, and we need to ensure that what we can do is apply those interventions to different groups of people who are at risk of those diseases and have those diseases and need to have effective treatment.
Well, let's take something like malaria or, for instance, HIV. You know a lot of the do's and don'ts with these diseases. You've got all of the knowledge. What are the problems that you encounter in getting that knowledge practically applied in the community, particularly, say, in places like here in Tanzania?
My experience with HIV research is in delivering antiretrovirals and making those antiretrovirals linked to prevention procedures as well, so that when we deliver the antiretrovirals, we make sure that people are informed of the different ways of preventing the transmission of HIV. We've done that in Mwanza, a lot of the research that we did in Mwanza, and it's now a matter of making sure that we can roll that out to different health centres and clinics there.
And in malaria?
And in malaria, the whole procedure is similar, linking prevention with treatment. And we have effective treatments now, and we can link them to the use of bed nets and to reducing the number of mosquitoes that are there to infect new people, transmit the disease.
Yes, I'd add on to that, that in malaria we've benefited over the years, the last 10 or 15 years, from increased funding for research and identification of several very effective interventions, including insecticide-treated nets, more effective drugs, and preventive strategies in pregnancy. And now we're facing the huge challenge of actually delivering those interventions on a large scale across large areas of Africa.
I also wanted to stress the fact that these diseases don't happen in isolation. Delivering interventions against HIV means that we also got to think about TB. Delivering interventions against malaria means we need to think about other infectious diseases. And so it's important that we consider how we can deliver the interventions for other diseases at the same time.
One of the things I wanted to ask you, Hugh Rayburn, was that we've been seeing here in the Kilimanjaro region of Tanzania, people who are not necessarily doctors, not necessarily even nurses, who do very effectively deliver some of the interventions. What is all of this about and how is it done?
This is a huge and relatively neglected area. In many African countries, including Tanzania, most healthcare is actually delivered by a grade of staff that are referred to as non-physician clinicians. So these are staff who've had perhaps 3 or 4 years of training to deliver basic health services, and they do a fantastic job all the way across the country. However, they face a lot of challenges, and it's an important target to try and improve the support these staff receive to do their job.
And Jim Todd, you're responsible for looking into capacity development. How do you build up such teams?
I think it's very important that the training that we give to health professionals in Tanzania is coordinated, and we build up the expertise they have in delivering these different interventions, and also of developing research ideas of their own and being part of the research team. I think the teaching and the research go hand in hand, and we need to build both of those up together.
I know that both of you are quite interested in the London School of Hygiene's distance learning techniques. What do you both make of those?
Well, it provides a fantastic opportunity for many of our staff who wouldn't normally be able to raise the funds to come to London to actually undertake master's and diploma courses. So a number of our staff have benefited. We currently receive a scholarship award from the Commonwealth Fund, and we were always eager to identify new sources of funding to put more of our staff on these courses.
I think that the distance learning has enabled the material that the London School has developed over the last 20 years to be delivered to a wider audience. Instead of just having people coming to London and working on the, or being taught in London, we can now deliver that material to thousands of people throughout the world. And I think distance learning has been a big success for the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine in delivering the materials that they've developed. I think the big problem in Africa and in many developing countries is that the expertise and the training that students have had before starting distance learning has been quite at a very low level. And what we need to do is work very much on overcoming that hurdle that they will have from going to ordinary bachelor's courses that they have in universities here to the high level of the distance learning master's and diploma courses that we can deliver through the London School materials. And I think that is the big thing that we need to do in Africa, is develop the materials to enable the learning experience of students who are undertaking the distance learning to be improved, expanded and built upon.
And I believe networking among such professionals is also quite key to this.
I think networking is one way that we can actually develop those expertise.
How do you do it?
Well, there's a lot of people with the expertise, but they're only in one place. And what we need to do is to develop those courses so that they can be delivered throughout different places. For instance, within the Thrive Network, which is a network of seven different institutions in East Africa, we have got many different expertises, and we need to actually ensure that those can be delivered in all of the different institutions. We can develop short courses which enable people to build upon those skills and deliver them to the next generation of scientists.
I would just add to that that the Thrive is the consortium that we, our particular group, are involved with, but the Wellcome Trust have funded more than half a dozen, I think, of these across Africa. And this represents a very new approach to capacity building and training for research in Africa. And we're feeling our way, but it's a very exciting experience and it's going well.
What do both of you think about the capacity, the potential for getting this knowledge up to the policymakers? How do you reach the policymakers to try and get the sort of support politically and nationally and regionally that you actually need?
I think that what we're doing now is making sure that we build in the support from the National AIDS Control Programme and the National Malaria Control Programme in Tanzania to the design as well as the implementation of our research, and also ensuring that they know of the opportunities for training their own staff using the short courses that we have developed and the master's courses that we have, so that they can also come in and be part of the networking and the training that we're giving to the professionals within Tanzania and in East Africa.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And there's a very interesting example in Tanzania where the Gates Malaria Partnership, which was a research grant awarded to Brian Greenwood at the London School a number of years ago, was able to build capacity for both research and for implementation. And that resulted in a training centre based in Dar es Salaam, where the National Malaria Control Programme themselves are housed within an office under the National Institute for Medical Research, and our own research group has an office there. So it's increased our dialogue and it's increased the relevance of our research and the exchange of ideas and the cross-fertilisation, and finally the translation of our findings into research, which is one of the reasons that Tanzania has become a leader for research in the field of malaria diagnosis.
We have to recognise that there's a lot of different groups doing research and getting good data and having some very interesting results coming out of this. And what we can do as a team, if we build the right networks and to network with the policymakers, ensure that the results from those research programmes are actually being used by the government and by the policymakers in delivering effective interventions to the people who need them.
And I think we must emphasise that this is not a territory occupied by superstar scientists or superstar politicians. The professionals that are really important, many of them are working at the day-to-day village level, aren't they?
That's true. I think that at all of these, all levels, I think it's the people who do the day-to-day work and who collect the data, who deliver the prevention messages and who give the treatment to patients with those diseases, who are actually doing the work which enables us to build upon that and to find out which interventions work and to then deliver them to the policymakers.
So in many ways, these are by far and away the most important people.
Yes, I think that these points bring us back to some of the first points we made in this discussion, which is that there needs to be effective capacity for research and connections between researchers and policymakers, and then with health systems back to the people who implement this research. And this provides the only realistic opportunity to fulfill the aspiration that has been proposed in a mortality review of childhood deaths, that 70% of childhood deaths in the world could be averted if we simply implemented what we already know effectively.
I think also to say that we have trained quite a few people to a very high level from many countries, and people here have achieved very high levels of competency in research and in their expertise in epidemiology and in other medical fields. But I think what we need to do is to deliver the next level of the cadre of people who can deliver these interventions. We need to deliver the hundreds of epidemiologists and statisticians who can translate this into work throughout the whole of the country.
So what would you say to anybody who's listening in Africa, but also in other parts of the world where people are faced with similar problems in low and middle income countries? What kind of call would you make out to ordinary people who have the ability to be professionally involved?
I think we need to build in the training at every single level, not just at the highest level of PhDs, but also at master's level and at short courses for undergraduate students and for diplomas, so that we can make sure that everybody has the opportunity to have their abilities developed so as to deliver these interventions.
Yeah, I'd completely go along with that. I think we need to build the culture that respects evidence as a source of implementing and making interventions work, and everyone should then be able to play a more effective part in that whole process, and it's a complex process.
Now, distance learning is proceeding apace at institutions, especially the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, but one area I know you're very interested in, this is the Diploma in Tropical Medicine and Hygiene. What about this?
Yeah, well, we're interested to extend and develop a new strategy to export the expertise and specialisation that's available in the school to other institutions and other countries. So along these lines, we've been involved over the last couple of years in building up the capacity for running the Diploma in Tropical Medicine and Hygiene in Africa. So a number of diplomas run around the world, but this one is the first in Africa. And we piloted last year, and this year we're going to run a full course in Africa, and the award, the qualification, will be granted by the London School.
And what kind of people can take that?
So this is currently restricted to clinicians who want to specialise in clinical tropical medicine with an emphasis now on public health and research in addition.
I think there's a lot of opportunities for universities in developing countries in Africa and in many other places around the world to deliver high quality diploma and master's level courses. And I think that the London School has a big role in networking and collaborating with those institutions so that they can deliver the best quality teaching materials in situations which are perhaps in developing countries where students are exposed to these diseases but don't have the same materials available to them.
And I would add that a very interesting element of the way that the DTMNH is being developed in Africa is that half of the students are from developed countries and they're willing to pay the full fee, and that fee is subsidising the other half of the students who are members of teaching hospitals in Africa who can attend for free. And the students will interact, we think, in a very positive way and create a new model of learning at this level.
And this is not a short-term thing. This is something which is going to take years, 5 years or 10 years, for the materials to be embedded within the culture of the institution so that they can then be delivered in a way that will be sustainable and will enable the students to take it forward and go from being students on the courses to actually teaching those concepts to the next generation of students.
Jim Todd and Hugh Raeburn, thank you very much indeed. For Audio News, I'm Peter Goodwin here at the Kilimanjaro Medical Centre.